Welcome to Family Talk.
It's not every day that you talk with someone who epitomizes the grace and kindness of our Lord. Yet Wentley Phipps is such a man. On today's edition of Family Talk, we'll get to hear his story, including what it was like to sing for Billy Graham's Crusades. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and today we're going to continue our program with world-renowned vocal artist Wentley Phipps. Recently, our co-host Dr. Meg Meeker sat down with Wentley and discussed his career in music, and specifically what it was like to sing for Billy Graham's Crusades. But before we get into that interview, let me introduce our guest. Mr. Phipps is well known for his rendition of Amazing Grace that has been viewed over 7 million times on YouTube. Although he continues to perform music, his main focus is the US Dream Academy, of which he is both the founder and CEO. In just a moment, we'll pick up with part two of his story. But before we jump in, let me share with you about an exciting opportunity that is only available this month. For the month of July, we have handpicked two resources to help you or someone you love raise a strong-willed child. For every donation we receive through the month of July, we'll say thank you by sending you my dad's book, The New Strong-Willed Child, and the DVD from our Building a Family Legacy film series. Donate today by calling us at 877-732-6825 or clicking on the banner at drjamesdobson.org. Let's get to the program now. Here is Dr. Meg Meeker as she asks Wentley Phipps about singing for Billy Graham's Crusades on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Tell me about singing for Billy Graham's Crusades. What was that like?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I will tell you first about singing for, you know, whether it's Democrats or Republicans. You know, I've been blessed to sing for, you know, all the last six administrations, as it were. But I will say it this way. One day I had to sing at a big function where President Clinton spoke. And the very same night, I had to rush across town and sing at this big Republican function. And when I got there, I announced that I had just come from singing for the President of the United States. And there was this boo and rumbling that went through the audience. And I said, now, wait a minute. I said, I always go where people really need the Lord.
Yes.
And there was this, you know, this polite applause. And then I said, and that's why I'm here, because whether
right.
It's Democrats or Republicans, we all need the Lord, you know?
Yes,
and,
yes.
But I've been on an airplane once or twice a week for about 35 years, and I've had some of the most amazing experiences on planes. I remember once we were flying back on Eastern Airlines. That's how long ago it was. To Atlanta, and we saw this lady in first class, and I went and I got a cassette because they didn't have CDs then. That's how long ago it was.
Yes.
And I knelt down beside her. I said, you know, God has impressed me to come talk to you. I'm a gospel singer. The kind of music I do is gospel music, and there's this song called Lord, I Give You My Life. It's about giving your life to God. She said, thank you so much. She said, I travel with a cassette player and a little Walkman, you know, and she said, and
yes.
I can play this tape you've given me as I travel. When the plane landed in Atlanta, she was standing in the jetway waiting for me, and she took my hand, she squeezed it, her eyes were misty, she had a warm, beautiful smile, and she said to me, thank you so much, God bless you.
Mm.
That lady was Natalie Wood.
Really?
A few days before she drowned. And when I heard that she had drowned, I was shaken, but I knew without a doubt that it was not by accident that God had allowed our paths to cross and had given me this strong impression to share this little bit of his glory and song with her. But another Eastern Airlines flight, I saw this flight attendant, and she looked a little discouraged to me, and I got another cassette, and I said, you know, I feel impressed of God to give this to you. She said, thank you so much. I've been having a rough time, and this will be such a blessing. Well, a few weeks later, she was working another flight, and she saw a man by the name of Cliff Barrows, who you may know directed the music for the Billy Graham Crusades for the last 50 years. And she said, "Mr. Barrows, it's such an honor to have you on my flight." She said, "But can I ask you something?" She said, "Have you ever heard of a young man by the name of Wintley Phipps?" He said, "No, I've never heard of him." She said, "Hold on a minute." She went back to her purse and got that cassette and handed it to him said, "This has been a blessing to me, but I want you to have it." And it was about 3 weeks later, I got a call from Cliff Barrows saying, "We want you to become one of the soloists with the Billy Graham Crusades."
Did you just about die?
Oh, it was an amazing moment. And it has been my honor and my blessing and pleasure to travel with Mr. Graham's Crusades to many different cities in this country. And one great memory is when he did his first crusade in Moscow, when Russia opened up for the very first time. George Beverly Shea, who is my hero, Bev Shea, as you know, is the bass soloist that sang with his crusades and made "How Great Thou Art," really the song that is so well known by so many. And I did a concert with Bev Shea. He died at 104, but we did a concert when he was 101. And so he lived a long, wonderful life. And he could not go to the crusade in Moscow, and they asked me to go in his place. And what an amazing moment it was to sing with a choir of Russian singers of 5,000 and a choir of 5,000. And one night at the crusade, which is a precious memory, the Russian Red Army chorus closed the crusade evening singing the battle hymn of the Republic.
No.
So to hear this communist country chorus singing "His Truth Is Marching On."
Only God.
It was an amazing moment.
Were people in Moscow at that time open to what Dr. Graham had to say and open to the gospel message?
Oh, yes. It was amazing. There were actually 100,000 people inside the Olympic Stadium listening to him, and there were tens of thousands on the outside in the winter, watching widescreen televisions in the snow.
Wow.
Mm. So it was an amazing reception, and I'm so honored that I was able to see that for myself and to be a part of it.
Yes. Now, you have children.
Yes. I have three sons, Wintley, Winston, and Wade, and they are all, by God's grace, serving the Lord, doing well, and we're trying to keep them encouraged as they move along.
Yes. Any grandbabies?
No, not yet.
Not yet.
We're waiting on that, and Mama has let them know that she wants it in the right order, you know?
Yes, so, indeed.
Let's get the marriage first and then
That's
children,
right.
You know?
That's right. Did you ever take your sons with you on singing crusades?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, I would often see great preachers and great businessmen who would make incredible, have incredible accomplishments, but they would lose their children and lose their families. And because the little quote that you said, it is in the quiet crucible. God gave me that quote. It is in the quiet crucible of our personal, private sufferings that our noblest dreams are born, and God's greatest gifts are given. And often God gives his greatest gifts in compensation for what we have been through.
Mm-hmm.
And so because I didn't have a strong nuclear family when I was growing up, I was incredibly determined that I did not want to miss out on the joy of a family on the front side of my life and on the back side of my life. I didn't want to go through my whole life without knowing the joy of family. And so to be able to share music and do ministry, I would have to the only way we could be together is I would have to take them. And so people would invite me, and I would say, I'd be honored to come. It's just, you know, we all have to come. And so it took a little audacity to do that. But
so you took the whole family.
Yeah, and it paid off. So we have a blessing that very few families on the earth can say that they've had, and that is my wife and my three sons, all five of us, have been together on every continent of the world except Antarctica. So we've been to the Great Wall of China together as a family. We've been to South America together as a family. We've been to Africa as a family. And my youngest son, by the time, poor guy, by the time he was 10, he had been to Australia 8 times by the time he was 10 years old. And
wow.
Because we would just drag him on those long flights, and it just became a part of our family memories and our family traditions.
But that's the good stuff, isn't it? You know, many of our listeners don't have the opportunity to take their kids all over the world, but it's really about just experiencing life together, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You are blessed with memories that will stay with you for your life. I remember the Christian church and the people in Papua New Guinea, they reached out to me and they said, you come to Australia so many times and you bypass us, you know. We would like for you to come and see us. I said, sure, you know. And so we booked a flight, and we flew into Port Moresby, the capital of New Guinea and Papua New Guinea, and then we went up to Mount Hagen up in the highlands and the jungles. And when we landed, they said, you're 2 hours drive away from where you're supposed to speak, but don't worry, we have a helicopter here for you. And oh my goodness, my wife was a little nervous because we sitting at the helicopter door, you could see light shining through from, you know, outside. And when we came into land, it was dusk, and there were 10,000 people waiting in a clearing in the jungle. And we got off the helicopter, trudged through the mud, and went up. And there was not one fixed building. There was not a chair. They sat on the ground. When it rained, there were no umbrellas. They just sat. And I preached and sung my heart out because what a moment to be in the heart of Papua New Guinea and with my children there with me. So it's one of those memories we cherish as a family.
Oh, to get off the plane and think, well, where do I start and what do I do? There's the dependence on God.
Absolutely.
You just go. He will tell you what to say. You have a huge heart for children, and you love reaching out and encouraging children whose parents are in prison.
Yes.
Where did that come from?
Well, it actually started because I was on an Amtrak train about 30 years ago going from Baltimore to Philadelphia. And on Amtrak, when you don't want somebody to sit next to you, you learn how to camp out and you put your food all around you and your
papers, I thought I was the only one.
And you try to send the message, please find someplace else to sit. And I got on the train, and there was this man. He looked really discouraged, and there were other seats available, but I walked up to him. I said, excuse me, is anybody sitting next to you? And he smiled. He said, no, and he pulled up his papers, and it was Chuck Colson.
Oh, my.
And that's how we met.
God really literally just maneuvers you almost into people's laps, doesn't he?
I cannot begin to tell you how all of my life God has done that. And with some of the most amazing human beings. I mean, I've never had a manager, I've never had an agent, but God has given me friendships and relationships that agents could not orchestrate for you.
Exactly.
So Chuck began to take me with him to the prisons, and he would speak and I would sing. And I remember going to a prison. It's just a memory. Tears almost come to my eyes when I think about it. We went to a prison in Florida, and it was Marion, Florida. And we went to the men's prison, and as I started to hum, I always hum Amazing Grace before I sing it. And as I was humming it, all of the prisoners, without being instructed, began to stand like they were standing at attention, like they were listening to the national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
And I ever since then, I call Amazing Grace the national anthem of sinners, you know?
Yes.
And then we went over to the women's prison. I sang Amazing Grace over there, and a young lady came up to me, tears in her eyes. She was pregnant and about to have her baby in prison. And she said, "Excuse me, sir." She said, "Your wife named Linda?" I said, "Yes." She said, "That's my aunt." It was my wife's brother's daughter, who we didn't realize was in prison and about to give birth to a child. And as Chuck was so gracious, he allowed me to serve on the board of directors of a Prison Fellowship Ministries. And that's where I learned how you build and run a ministry with integrity. I learned that from Chuck Colson.
Mm.
And while on the board, a very important statistic surfaced that almost 70% of all children in America who end up in prison come from the children of those who are in prison now.
Mm-hmm.
And I just began on the board. I kept saying, let's do something to help those kids. You know, the Angel Tree kids, the ones that we give gifts at Christmas time. We know their names and addresses.
Yes.
Let's build ministry to these kids because they're the ones most likely to follow their parents. And Chuck and the board said, you know, this is a calling on your life, and we want to help you get started. And so they got me my first office space and my first employee, and Prison Fellowship really helped me launch what is now the U.S. Dream Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been operating for almost 20 years now. And we are in Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Philadelphia, Houston, Memphis, Salt Lake City, Indianapolis, Orlando. And that's all we do after school. We tutor and mentor, in the name of Christ, children whose parents are in prison and children falling behind in school.
So does the Dream Academy, it's in all these different cities. Do you find individual people to go into the schools, or do you have centers where the kids come to after school with the Dream Academy?
We partner with struggling schools.
Okay.
One of the unique things about our program is a lot of programs often go in and say, send us, you know, you're gifted and you're talented. And we say, send us the kids who are not doing well.
Yes.
And who, without our help, would most likely end up in prison. And the schools give us space. And we actually set up operation in the school.
Are these public schools?
Yes, these are public schools.
And they don't mind that you're a Christian ministry?
Oh, no, not at all. And one of the reasons is we share, and this is really critical, I think. It's one thing to share the teachings of your church. It's another thing to share the principles, and I should say the principles that empower and reveal to us the character of Christ.
Mm.
So our program is built on character building. It's built on academic skill building. Three pillars: character building, academic skill building, and dream building, helping to connect them with the dream that God has been dreaming for them.
Mm. That's so beautiful, and I think the lesson can be so broad because I do a lot of work with parents. My ministry, if you will, my life's work is devoted as a pediatrician to helping and encouraging parents.
Yeah.
And a lot of times parents will ask, how do I teach my kids about God? How can I ensure that my children will grow up and love the Lord? And I find they haul them places and they teach them things and they tell them. But you're talking about an extra dimension, aren't you?
Well, I'm talking about a dimension that somehow has gotten lost in our church.
Yes.
And in the church. And what I mean by that is, it is almost more important to teach a person to be a Christ-like Christian than just be a Christian.
Yes.
In other words, to help people learn the importance of resembling Christ, reflecting Christ, and revealing Christ. You know, as so often I tell people that we have a situation where we have so much knowledge that is shared about Christ, but we don't have enough that's being taught about the character of Christ and how we as individuals can emulate and imitate, really, the character of Christ. And I'll say this to you. I was speaking in Australia last year, and I remember standing before the congregation, and I said, I've come all the way to Australia to make a simple case for the preeminence of Christ-like character.
Mm.
In other words, if we get everything else right and we don't get Christ-like character,
yes,
we missed what Christianity was meant to be about and what Christianity was meant to accomplish in the world. Because what happens is we've raised a generation who know about him,
yes,
but we don't have a generation that looks like him.
Yes.
And that's the great need of the world today.
You're absolutely right. And as you're talking, boy, you're hitting the nail right on the head. And I think what you're describing is exactly what I was trying to describe early in the program that I so admire about you, is you sing and Christ comes out. And I hope God doesn't take this the wrong way. You don't take it the wrong way, but I often feel that if God came down and sang us a song, it'd sound just like you.
Oh, my. I have a dream, by the way, and I have actually two little dreams I tell people about, and the dream is that one day I'll be in heaven working on my mansion with my holy hammer. and I'll hear a knock on the door, and when I open it, Jesus will be standing there, clothed in light and glory, and he'll say, "My son, I'm about to go to some parts of my universe where they've never heard a child from earth who has been redeemed, and I want you to come go with me. And oh, by the way, I want you to sing just before I speak." So that's my dream. And the other dream is that we will be in heaven, and maybe we'll see a billboard that says God in concert tonight. And I want to be on the front row for that one, I tell you.
I think you'll be on the stage singing right next to him. I'm telling you. Well, you know, I think God may just give you those dreams because he's given you many, many so far. And you are a blessed man.
Well, I hate to cut in here, but we are out of time for today. We've been listening to the second part of an interview between Dr. Meg Meeker and world-renowned vocal artist Whitley Phipps here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and quickly, I want to preview tomorrow's program. Next time, we're going to air Whitley's rendition of Amazing Grace, which he performed at one of the Gaithers homecoming events. It is so powerful, and you don't want to miss it. Also, don't forget the offer that will help you or someone you love raise a strong-willed child. For all donations we receive in the month of July, we'll say thank you by sending you my dad's book, The New Strong-Willed Child, and the corresponding DVD from our Building a Family Legacy film series. Donate today by calling us 877-732-6825 or clicking the banner at drjamesdobson.org. This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next time for the conclusion of our interview with Whitley Phipps on the next edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
When you become a parent, you find out quickly that kids don't come with instruction manuals. But you'll be glad to know that now they do, or at least with an iPhone app, free from Family Talk. This app personalizes resources around where you are in life. Whether you're a mom, dad, or looking for encouragement in your marriage, this app is for you. The app is packed with parenting and marriage advice from the expert on such matters, Dr. James Dobson. The app also allows you to set reminders to help you keep connected to God and your family. Go to the Family Talk website at drjamesdobson.org/app to download your free customized Family Talk app today. Again, that's drjamesdobson.org/app.